Well, hello, good morning, brothers and sisters. So we read from Exodus chapter 17, and the first part of that, first half of the chapter, was this story of when they arrived at a place that was called Rephidim, and it's somewhere on the Sinai Peninsula, and that's where Moses got water from the rock. And it's very dry in the Sinai Peninsula. And I want you to imagine traveling in a parched desert where rain is rare and water, when it comes, vanishes as quickly as it appears. It very rarely rains. And when it does rain, it rains really very heavily. And it's all too likely when it does rain, the water quickly forms into rivers and runs away, or it just soaks into the ground and is gone. So, the opposite of the Thames Valley, really. I mean, if you remember in November last year after Storm Bert, everyone in Oxford was anxious about floods because the rain wasn't going anywhere. It was staying in Oxford. And then it hit Reading and then it went further. But no, in this place, the rain just goes, the water just vanishes. But occasionally, the water does not run away. A scientific journal article from 20 years ago explains quite well how it's possible for porous rock like sandstone and limestone to hold a lot of rainwater, a bit like a sponge. And this only happens under very special circumstances when the sandstorms in the region can blow a very hard, polished surface onto these rocks. But there has been at least one account from about 90 years ago of a group of British soldiers in Sinai digging in a dried-up riverbed looking for water. And it's told of them suddenly sticking their spades through a very hard layer of rock and then producing a sudden gush of water from the ground underneath them. And more recently, an archaeological survey from the area around the Bedouin well at Bir Resesim, sounds a little bit like Rephidim, has shown that about 3 meters below the surface of a dried up riverbed, there is an actual underground river, which is made up of water bearing shale. So you've got all these stones underneath the river where there's a hidden river running. So perhaps getting water from a rock is easier than we thought. Perhaps there was no actual miracle for Moses to produce water from the rock. Perhaps it was all just a question of knowing where to look for the water. Where's the right place to hit my staff on this rock to get the water? So, how does this combination of scientific knowledge and a classic miracle from the Old Testament sit with you? Some of us who believe that God worked a mighty miracle and created new water to appear at the time will not like a physical explanation of what happened. I mean, it's a miracle, and you have to have faith in a miracle. If the miracle turns out to be a combination of a natural occurrence and a coincidence of hitting the correct rock in the correct place, then that faith no longer seems to be necessary. If I was to tell you that the Old Testament account was just about some water that was under the rocks the whole time, then perhaps you might say that I'm trying to destroy faith. But let's look at the water from the rock another way, though, because we might be able to see that this miracle is even more amazing than we imagined. Israel was a very large group of people. According to the Bible, there were more than 500,000 people who could fight in the army. That's men of a certain age. Add in all the families, and you might be up in the millions somewhere from that 500,000. And there are skeptics who don't believe these numbers, but even those skeptics that don't believe in millions of people admit that they must have been tens of thousands of people. There were a large group, moving through an area which is very short on natural supplies. It's wilderness. They were always hungry and thirsty. Whenever they arrived at some oasis, they must have immediately depleted it of all of its resources. God was now having to send them miracle bread and miracle birds from the sky in order to keep them from dying. Imagine 2 or 3 million people who have been marching for weeks and who are running out of supplies, turning up at a well-known watering place. It's called in the local language the place of rest. That's what Rephidim means, the place of rest. We've got to it. This is our place of rest. It's the only service station for miles around. But when we get there, it's completely out of water. And the people grumbled. You brought us out of our way here because you promised us rest and water. And what happens now that there's no water? Are we expected to die here? What was the point of leaving Egypt only to die of thirst? We're in the wrong place. But in the face of all this great need, God had a plan. He knew that he'd brought them to the right place. The miracle that God performs is to guide Moses to the hidden water. It's not the wrong place with no water. It's the right place with plenty of water for everyone. So even if you look at the miracle of water from the rock as a natural occurrence, then you have God saying to Moses, the water is here. You're standing on it. The people are all grumbling because they're thirsty and they believe that there's no water. But the reality is that the water's already there. It's under their feet and it's all around them. They're literally standing on it. Perhaps there are times in your life when you believed that there was no hope, that you were lost. But it turned out that there was an answer staring you in the face all along. For some people, the existence of Jesus in their lives is like this. Perhaps they learn about Jesus when they are young and then they forget about him. Perhaps they only have a very scant knowledge of the Bible. But then one day, when they're at their lowest ebb, they might discover Jesus, rediscover Jesus. The seed has been sown in their mind a long, long time ago, and it might then suddenly start to grow. The Bible that they discover in their hotel bedroom might open a way forward for them. There are plenty of ways that God can say to people, look, you're standing on it. It's all around you. And sometimes the miracle is not producing something out of nothing, but the miracle is demonstrating that the something has been there all the time. I'm going to think about a very different Bible story, or maybe a similar Bible story, but think about Elisha and the siege of Samaria. Elisha's servant looked out over the city walls of Samaria, and Elisha's servant was frightened because he saw that the countryside around the city of Samaria was full of soldiers and horses and chariots. People inside the city were being starved by the presence of these soldiers. They were already hungry. And they were thirsty, and there were people dying. The servant knew that he was likely to die of hunger or of thirst, or to die some really gruesome way when the enemy finally broke through the wall of the city. And with this servant being frightened, Elisha prayed that the servant's eyes would be opened. Now, I want you to picture the scene. Maybe we're making a movie of this. So you zoom in on the face of Elisha's servant. Really tight, tighter, tighter, until his face fills the whole of the frame. And while you're looking at the face of this servant, it changes from the face of a frightened man into a face of someone who's full of wonder and awe. And perhaps this face is glowing ever so slightly. And then you start with the camera to pull back from the servant's face. And at this point, you can see over the servant's shoulder the figure of a fiery angel. And you pull back some more, and there's another angel. And as you go on, there's another angel, and another angel, and another one. And as you pull away from Elisha's servant, you see more and more angel soldiers, and you see fiery chariots, and they cover the plains around the city. And they're even seen on the distant hills around the city. So Elisha's prayer shows the servant that God is on their side. God is all around them with these fiery angels and fiery chariots. God is all around them. God is protecting them. If you like, God is under their feet. God is surrounding them. When Paul wrote to the church in Corinth, I'm going to quote from 1 Corinthians chapter 10. He told them that our ancestors, and of course, for Paul and the people he was writing to, the ancestors were Israel, said, our ancestors were all under the cloud and they all passed through the sea. They were all baptized into Moses in the cloud and in the sea. They all ate the same spiritual food and drank the same spiritual drink, for they drank from the spiritual rock that accompanied them. And that rock was Christ. Paul says that the rock that Israel drank from was Christ. This shows us that the striking of the rock in the wilderness was pointing forward to Jesus, the greater rock who was to come. The story from the Old Testament about the water from the rock was anticipating Jesus. Even at the time of Moses, thousands of years before, God already had a plan in place to send Jesus to the world. And this miracle from thousands of years ago is showing us something about Jesus. God had a plan in place when Israel arrived at the oasis of Rephidim, because God had already planted the water there under the ground that Israel was about to come and walk on. God had a plan in place for us today, in that he already sent us his son Jesus long before we were born or even thought of. Jesus was part of the plan all along. And was it Wednesday? I read from Mark chapter 1, and as soon as it starts, it's quoting from Isaiah and saying, these events, they happened because they were written about. And all through the beginning of the Gospels was Song of Mary, Song of Simeon, Song of Anna. They're all saying that the plan was already in place. And where I was quoting from in the first letter to Corinthians, Paul goes on to talk about how the people of Israel were sharing together in the same experience. They were sharing the experience of drinking water from the rock and eating bread that had come from heaven. And how, as Christians, we share in eating and drinking together to remember Jesus. And he tells us that we, like Israel, are put in a special place because of what God has provided for us. And he goes on to say that we ought to come to this service, the breaking of bread, with a clear conscience, because we know that we are truly coming together to share an experience of remembering Jesus. Bishop Timothy Dudley Smith died last summer. He was born a very time ago, and it was a sadness to people, but not a shock, because he lived to the grand old age of 97. And Timothy Dudley Smith wrote the song as water to the thirsty. So is my Lord, my living Lord. So is my Lord to me. Apparently, this was his first attempt at having a song published. And he went on to write lots and lots more. So he said that as water to the thirsty, so is my Lord to me. He knew that like a gush of water coming out of the rock in Exodus, Jesus is vital to our lives. For Timothy Dudley Smith, the image of a thirsty person suddenly being presented with all the water they need was a picture of us. We who would otherwise be spiritually parched and dry are presented with Jesus. Jesus comes into the world. Jesus in our lives becomes the living water, the water of life. One more passage to go to, and this is in John, because in the Gospel of John, it's actually chapter seven of the Gospel of John, we learn that Jesus once visited the Feast of Tabernacles in Jerusalem, and that he preached there, and that he amazed a lot of people with his teaching. Now, the Feast of Tabernacles is a really very lively festival. It's got camping outside. It's got lots of candle lighting, and it's got lots of celebration. The feast celebrated the way that God provided for his people through the 40 years wilderness wandering. So back in Exodus, it's celebrating all of that stuff. When God led his people by the pillar of fire and cloud, and God gave his people water from the rock. And not only is there camping outside and lots of candle lighting, there is no shortage of water at this festival. They have water everywhere, and there is a great deal made of ritually cleansing things by pouring water over them. And Jesus took the opportunity of seeing all of this water being thrown around and all of this cleansing going on. And when he was at the festival in John chapter 7, and it's, verse 37, says there, John says, on the last and greatest day of the festival, Jesus stood and said in a loud voice, "Let anyone who is thirsty come to me and drink. Whoever believes in me, as scripture has said, rivers of living water will flow from within them." By this, he meant his spirit, whom those who believed in him were later to receive. So not only is Jesus the rock, which is what Paul tells us in Corinthians, but Jesus is a water providing rock. Jesus is the water of life, providing life and hope to the spiritually dry. Previously in the Gospel of John, a chapter before this chapter about the Feast of Tabernacles, Jesus has also declared to the Pharisees in a conversation about bread from heaven that he, Jesus, is the bread of life. So Jesus is the bread of life in one chapter, and he's the water of life in the next. He's therefore completed the picture of being the fulfillment of God's plan of salvation. So that's it. That's all really I wanted to say about water from the rock. It's a classic miracle from the Old Testament. And we often think about it, I think, as God creating new water out of nothing. But we could perhaps think about it as God providing water in advance. Perhaps it was a natural occurrence, but God made sure the water was there ready. If God had already put the water in place and guided Israel to it, then he was able to say to them, "Look, you're standing on it. It's all around you." And as we come to take the bread and the wine now, let us remember Jesus, the bread of life and the water of life. We might be in the driest, most hopeless time of our lives. We might be thirsty, looking for meaning in our lives. If that's the case, then let us take heart. God can miraculously guide us to the true water of life. Just as God promised water to the Israelites in the wilderness, he offers us living water today in Jesus Christ. God's plan is already in place. God's plan has been in place for thousands of years. When we're looking for meaning and purpose, sometimes it may be that God just needs to nudge us a bit and tell us, look, you're standing on it. It's all around you.